This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
No! James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is on the freeway.
What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. You're going to have to bear with me this week. I'm a little sick. My voice is a little scraggly, and I'm trying to push through it. But I am here, and I'm ready to go. I'm here with Michael Shapiro from SI Now. How are you doing, man?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. So let's go ahead and get into it. The Rockets have, to me, and I've told you this, become must-watch television. Like, their appointment viewing. I've watched every single one of their games twice now. I don't want to miss a second. If someone ties their shoe, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to rewind it. I'm going to take notes about it. They are, to me, the NBA's, like, most interesting thing right now because of just how different what they're doing right now is. Like, small ball isn't unique. It's not new. But the way the Rockets are going about it is completely different. For example, when the Warriors did it, they obviously had Zaza Pachulia start games, and they had Andrew Bogut start games, and they had JaVale McGee off the bench. Like, at its peak, Draymond Green was playing 500 minutes a season at center. And so far this season, PJ Tucker's already played 600 minutes this season at center, and there's 28 games left. Like, that's just insane to me.
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting point. And when Steve Kerr and the Warriors had the death lineup, they really did restrict it to only when they needed it. But Mike D'Antoni is really taking a different tack here and relying on it heavily. But I really do think, at least in the regular season, it is a tack that's really going to work wonders for the Rockets and really could help them rack up the regular season wins.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and go over the early results here. So they're 6-2 since they went small, and they pretty much exerted Isaiah Hartenstein out of the rotation, and Clint Capella was down. They're 2-2 since the trade. I think they've looked better. I agree. It's clearly benefited Russell Westbrook. Since Houston went small, Westbrook's averaging 34.4 points per game, 7.6 rebounds per game, 6.1 assists per game, 1.7 steals per game on 56% true shooting. So the floor is spread. The lane is wide open. There's no big man clogging it up. And he's feasting. He's taking advantage of it, like exactly how you would picture it. The Rockets defensively look a little bit better. They're not all the way there yet. So this number I'm about to read to you, I had to take away the Phoenix sample size from this because that was completely diluting and weighing down Houston's defensive metrics. Like, they were like a 126 defensive rating in that game, and I just felt like that was an anomaly and it was good enough to take out. So since they started going to micro ball, they are 108.9. That's eighth in the NBA in that stretch. Now, that's not that much better than what the Rockets are right now. Like, in terms of that raw number, that's like 1.1 points per 100 possessions better than where they are defensively right now. But it's better. They look like they prefer playing this way better, like more. The switching is getting better. The communication is getting better. Robert Covington has been a godsend for them. Like, he is just a freak. Like, the amount of things he can do in one possession defensively is crazy. Like, his rotations are flawless. His communication's really good. His second burst, like, after he the initial jump's obviously pretty good. He's a really good athlete. But the second burst, like, just going up for a rebound, it's really, really good. And, like, the Rockets haven't had an athlete at the wing position in some time now. Like, even Trevor Ariza at his peak wasn't as athletic as Robert Covington. But yeah, he looks really good in Houston's lineup. And I mean, I don't know. I think I have a feeling they're going to be better defensively. I'm not sure how much better. Where do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know, I think that the defense is making strides and improvements. You know, I still wouldn't say that this is kind of a top-flight defense by any metric, but I think it's one that certainly can survive if it dedicates itself to doing so, right? And we've seen that the personnel and the turnovers that they've been able to force at 73 in the last four games, if this is an active and engaged defense, I think it's one that will be able to survive. Having said that, it's certainly something that where if the effort wanes over the last 30 games, we'll definitely see their results wane as well. So I think it's just largely an effort thing, but I think that the personnel to have an effective, albeit not a dominant defense, is there.
Yeah, so I remember last season, the Rockets, they started getting really better defensively towards the end of the season. Like, they were one of the best defenses in the NBA in their last 30 to 40 games. And as I was digging into their numbers, I was finding that they were still really bad at defensive rebounding. And what they were really doing is they were forcing a crap ton of turnovers, which is really unorthodox to get a top flight defense. Like, that's just not traditionally what you do. But, you know, I asked around to see if this was sustainable, and most people agreed with me. Like, this is not, you know, a sustainable model for defense. And not only do the Rockets disagree with that sentiment, they have doubled down on it. And Mike D'Antoni, whenever we mention offensive rebounds to him, he just completely dismisses it. He's like, listen, you guys need to stop reading offensive rebounds as a stat. You need to look at second chance points. And that's interesting because the Rockets don't view offensive rebounds as particularly hurting them. They view, like, can you score on us twice in a row? Like, yeah, you'll get the offensive rebound, but can you score on us after that? Like, that's how they view this. And I think that's fascinating. It's definitely bold. I'm not sure if it's sustainable. They're clearly more comfortable doing it. I'm not sure if going all in on this strategy is the best long-term solution, but I'm not going to dismiss it. I want to see, like, at least two more weeks of this before I make any definitive statement.
Yeah, and something I think that might be a bit of a concern is in the postseason and with better teams, they tend to turn the ball over less. You know, you think that's really been a trend over the last 10 years, that turnovers have kind of really been banished from the game as defenses and or teams and offenses look to, you know, minimize them. The Rockets have forced a lot of them, but I don't know if that's really something the playoffs will. They'll be able to force 18 to 20 turnovers, you know, 15 to 20 turnovers even per game. I feel like that probably won't happen. So it's probably, in my opinion, the biggest reason for worry with this new kind of radical plan that they have.
Yeah, and I agree. But I will say, over the last nine or so games, excuse me, they are first in opponents' turnovers per game. They're forcing nearly 17 per game. They're getting a ton of transition points. Like, the switching in particular is what's leading to these turnovers. It's not just them playing small. When they switch, they just get so many hands in the passing lanes. And Robert Covington's really helped with that because he has go-go gadget arms. And he helps with that. He helps with getting in the lanes and getting hands on balls. And the chemistry defensively between PJ Tucker and Robert Covington to me is really fascinating because they look like they were meant to play together, honestly. Like, they just look so comfortable on that back end, basically playing power forward and center respectively. And it's interesting that they're again doubling down on James Harden being able to defend bigs, and same thing with Eric Gordon and Westbrook. They're really, you know, maximizing the stoutness of their players and saying, hey, like, the reason we're doing this is because these guys are stellar at defending big men and nobody can score on us efficiently in the post. Like, yeah, sure, you'll get a size advantage in the post, but is it really a size advantage if PJ Tucker and James Harden and Russell Westbrook have this crazy lower center of gravity and you just can't move them? They're like rocks.
Right, exactly. And Celtics head coach Brad Stevens the other night actually compared them to linebackers, which I thought was kind of a apt and funny comparison. But you're exactly right. I mean, the Rockets have honestly been goading teams into forcing the ball down low, whether it be Anthony Davis and the Lakers. And granted, Davis had a big night, but Rudy Gobert really had a tough time as Utah just kept trying to feed the post. The Rockets, as you said, have a lot of very strong post defenders. Tucker is, of course, a brick wall. You know, Covington is more of a guy who's better at switching onto guards and switching onto centers, but he's still pretty effective. And James Harden, frankly, is the best post defender in basketball. He's giving up 0.55 points per post-up possession, which is astounding. And he actually has faced the most post-ups of any player this year. So, you know, you have the best post defender in basketball in James Harden, a guy who isn't really great defending one-on-one the perimeter. You know, I think it's something where you could expect the Rockets to continue to try to force teams to throw it down low and see if they can generate points that way.
Yeah, it completely gets teams out of their offense. Like, they stop running their traditional sets and, like, okay, we have to take advantage of this, right? Like, there's a 6'5 guy guarding Rudy Gobert right now. He's got to throw him in the basket. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Post-ups in general have been efficient for a very long time. It's like 0.77 points per possession. And when you add in the fact that the Rockets are really, really freaking good at defending them, like, it just doesn't work. Like, it's not a smart idea. But again, like, it's just a natural basketball thing to do. And especially when you're turning the ball over like crazy when you try to move the ball. So when you're getting all these turnovers, you're like, okay, let's slow it down. Let's isolate. And when you post up, that's just less efficient than running your traditional offense. But again, teams can't run their traditional offenses because they're getting all these turnovers. Like it's a chicken or the egg thing.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I think it goes down to the Rockets' formula that they've had for, you know, really the whole Harden era. They'll trade threes for twos, and frankly, if teams are trying to post up to get their twos instead of driving to the lane, that's another benefit for the Rockets. So I think they are playing kind of a smart math game in their, you know, by going undersized. It still has a lot of questions whether or not they'll get bludgeoned in a 7-game series in the postseason, whether it be against the Lakers or Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets or something like that. But again, in the regular season, I think that this kind of small ball tactic is really going to help the Rockets rack up some wins and potentially rise above that fifth spot in the Western Conference where they are right now.
And what you just mentioned there to me is the strongest argument I've seen against what the Rockets are doing. When you get 2 weeks to game plan for them, and you get a scheme, you get a watch, you get to prepare for their small ball units, and you get to come up with something maybe creative and out of the box, like Quinn Snyder using Rudy Gobert to guard Russell Westbrook. You know, that didn't work, but like it was different and it was creative, and you'd almost like to see what Quinn Snyder could do if he had another week to game plan for this kind of lineup, right? Like, this is the kind of stuff that I find compelling, because like, it is definitely a slap in the face to conventional norms. Like the Rockets are doing something completely out of the box. It's something that even the analytics community, like, they're not even ready to embrace this, right? Like, this is something that like even the smartest of people, like, they're like, okay, you have to at least have one 7-footer, right? Like, that's just you know, that's the way basketball has been played for the last 70 years. And the Rockets are like, you know what? Screw that. Like, why do we have to play that way when we're so much better with that, with having that big man out of the lane, having Westbrook drive with all his space? And let's talk about that for a minute. So Westbrook has been fantastic. I already read you the numbers at the top of the podcast, but it's really interesting how he's just going at these big men, and he's not even afraid. Like when Anthony Davis and Gobert are deciding to guard Westbrook because that's what Frank Vogel and Quinn Snyder are telling them to do, he's still going at them because how are you going to guard him with when he has a head of steam going to the basket? You're already backed up at the rim, but he's already there at the rim in like 2 seconds, and he's got all that momentum going that way. And if you're just to the side a little bit wrong, like there was a possession in that Lakers game where he was helping, where Anthony Davis was helping out on James Harden, and he was just to the side a little bit. And Anthony Davis is spry enough to recover in time for that kind of stuff. And he recovered in time, and still Westbrook got an easy layup like right away. And that to me is really, really interesting. Like, if teams are going to keep trying to put their bigs on Westbrook as a countermeasure.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think Russ is going to lick his chops if he's getting bigs put at him where he can kind of track back and get a head start towards the rim. I mean, the number in the last 8 games, he's been dominant since the new year, but in his last 8 games, he's averaging 36 points per game, shooting 52% from the field. And Davis and Gobert really didn't defend him all that well. He frankly kind of bullied Gobert and even rocked the baby on him after converting a layup at the rim. I believe that was on Sunday. And something about Russ, when he is flying to the tin, as you said, once he bumps a guy, gets him off their spot a little bit, regardless of their size, which he did to Gobert, he can then explode right up to the rim, which is, I think, is a key thing for the Rockets. You know, he'll put his head down, but then he has a lot of small kind of shimmies and shakes inside that really free him from the arms of defenders. And he's really just absolutely thriving with that another big body in the paint right now.
Yeah, and he stopped taking those threes, right? And that's also a big reason he's getting more efficient. He's not taking like 6 to 7 threes a game anymore. He's taking more like 2 or 3. And that's been pretty significant because he's just taking those 3 possessions and going straight to the hoop and converting. Because, again, he has all the space to work with, which is something no team has ever done before. No team's ever had a 4-out unit for Westbrook, like ever. Like, even in Oklahoma City, like, yeah, they tried Jeremy Grant at center at points, but they didn't do that for 48 minutes a game. And that's what the Rockets are doing. And like, it's provided so much space, so much open room. Like it's like where you're getting the rim protector away from the basket, obviously. And even if the rim protector is guarding Westbrook, like, he has no chance. He has absolutely no chance.
Yeah, and I mean, you talked about the Oklahoma City days. So it's like, not only was he often playing with his center, he was also playing with Andre Roberson. So it was Westbrook and 2 non-shooters on the floor, which essentially means, you know, 3 non-shooters on the floor. That's pretty unworkable. I mean, this has been so much better for Westbrook coming here and being able to play, and, you know, not only next to James Harden, but also in the system as well. And, you know, frankly, he has played like an MVP, and I think it is certainly very satisfying for him. After so many people kind of had derided him and wrote him off, including Rockets fans, over the past 3 years, to kind of come back with this roaring performance over the last, say, month and a half has been incredibly impressive, and I think, as Russ goes to Chicago, pretty darn satisfying.
All right, we interrupt this podcast to bring you the BetOnline.ag take of the week. BetOnline.ag is your online sportsbook expert. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for a 50% off welcome bonus. This is a new segment that I'm bringing onto the show to talk about any take I have on my mind about the Houston Rockets or the NBA in general and air my grievances on this podcast. This week it's going to be pre-recorded, but I feel like in the future it might be a better idea to have the guest weigh in on what they have to say on my take. But who cares? It's my podcast. I can do whatever the hell I want. But for this week, I'm going to have it just by myself pre-recorded, and you'll be sliced into the podcast. So my take of the week this week is that I don't know if Micro Ball will ever lead the Rockets to the promised land. And that's just a genuine opinion. I have no idea because I have never seen this before. And I feel like everybody on Twitter or on TV or on podcasts or on the radio shows feel like they need to get their opinions off right away. And you don't, because you haven't seen anything like this before. Like, this idea that the Warriors were the first team to do this, well, yeah, sure, they technically played Draymond Green at center for extended periods of time, but again, PJ Tucker has already played more minutes at center than Draymond has for an entire season, and there's 28 games remaining. So this is truly a new and unique experience, and I just want to watch it play out before I make judgments about it, and I feel like everybody wants to have a take on it. And what if the correct answer is we have no idea right now? What if the correct answer is this is challenging everything we have learned about basketball over the past 70 years, and all of our preconceived notions about basketball need to be put to the side for a little bit, because this is what the Rockets are betting on. The Rockets are betting on winning with something completely unique. And not just that, winning at the highest levels with something the NBA has never seen before. I did not expect Daryl to trade Clint Capela at the trade deadline. I really didn't. I said it on this podcast. I said it in my trade deadline preview. I didn't expect the Rockets to make a major, major move. I thought the Rockets would, you know, continue on with the status quo. I thought Nene would get traded. And I thought there was no way the Rockets would trade Clint Capela for Robert Covington. There was no way. It was just too drastic. And they did it. And they have clearly made the organizational decision that small ball will lead them farther than anything they could have done with Clint Capela. And that Russell Westbrook and James Harden need spacing for 48 minutes a game to truly be successful. And they could be right. I don't know. You know, defensively, there could be issues with bigger opponents. They haven't gone to a playoff series yet. How am I supposed to know that? It's one of those things where I just wished we all stopped and paused for a minute and said, you know, we don't really know the answer yet. This is really interesting. This is something to discuss, but not necessarily have a concrete opinion about. And everybody seems to have a concrete opinion about how it won't work, rather than how it might not work, or how they don't know if it'll work. Sometimes the correct answer is no answer at all, because we don't have the correct answer yet. And that is my betonline.ag take of the week. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% off welcome bonus at betonline.ag. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll bring it back next week, and we'll probably have the guests weigh in on it. All right, let's take a quick break to talk about our friends at Untuck It. Ever seen Untuck button down? They look bad. Why? Because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuck It, the original button-down shirt that actually is designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, Untuck It shirts always fall at the perfect untucked length. With more than 50 fit combinations, Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. Now, I've talked about this before on the podcast, but I don't have the greatest build, and it's really hard for me to go shopping and find shirts that fit my shoulders, my length, all that stuff, and look good. And thankfully, all the shirts that I bought at Untuck It over the past year, they just look like they were designed to be worn for my specific body. You can do this on Untuck It's website. They have really easy drop-down menus that you can find your perfect shirts, and it's really great for someone like me who has a weird, weird body type. So whether you're shopping for the perfect gift or trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuck It is the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's untuckit.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off. So let's go ahead and talk about the state of the team going into the All-Star break. So these numbers are according to Cleaning the Glass. They are 5th in offensive rating, 15th in defensive rating, 10th in net rating. They're expected to win around 49.5 games based on these numbers. So, you know, just basically a 50-win team flat. And to be brutally honest, like, these are the numbers of a really good playoff team, but nowhere near a true championship contender. I think we both think they can get better offensively with the small ball unit, but that 15th in defensive rating mark sticks out to me as a glaring red flag. I've said it for months, that's just not good enough. Like, at this moment, the Rockets are a title contender in name only. They have to climb to at least 10th. And with 28 games remaining, that's got to happen fast. Here's a question. Do we think they can get there? And how are you feeling about the state of the team right now?
You know, you kind of stole the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, you have to be about a top third defense, a top 10 defense, to really be able to sniff the finals. I would still have skepticism as if this team can really make a run for the finals. Perhaps if the bracket breaks correctly and, you know, maybe the Lakers have perhaps their injury or get knocked out. I know Houston, you know, beat Los Angeles a few nights ago, but I think over a 7-game series, they would kind of get worked pretty easily. Right now, though, I think I would pick the Rockets as the third team in the West, you know, outside of the two LA teams, if you're looking at Utah, Denver, and Houston. I just think that the way in which the Rockets have two true dynamic creators, I think, on their perimeter is something that Utah and Denver clearly, you know, don't really have. You know, I like Donovan Mitchell, but I don't think he's the late game scorer that either Westbrook or Harden are. In Denver, Nikola Jokic, of course, is magical, but I think they might run into problems creating on their perimeter. So I think the Rockets are kind of, in my opinion, slightly atop that second tier in the West in terms of just going into the postseason. But I think they are a significant step behind those Los Angeles teams.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I have them in that same grouping with Utah, Denver, and every other team that's not the Lakers or Clippers. I think they're really good. I think they still have another level to reach, and the defense in particular is where they need to get better. And if they have one thing going for them, it's their remaining strength of schedule. They are 24th in remaining strength of schedule right now. Their best opponents remaining are the Bucks, the Lakers, the Raptors, the Celtics, and the Clippers. And after that, it's like pretty, it's pretty manageable. Like, they can put together a run post All-Star break if their small ball units really starts to click a little bit. I don't know. Like, honestly, like, I don't know if Houston can get to a top 10 defense. I think they have the ability to now that they have found a style that suits them, and they're all buying in on it. Like, that's the most important thing, right? Like, when PJ Tucker was asked after the Utah game if the Rockets are going to keep, you know, trying to experiment with the small lineup, he's like, what experiment? This is like our real lineup. Like, this is like this is what we're going to do from now on. This is our style of basketball. I think that's important. Like, that to me is the most important thing. Like, they all believe from top to bottom in that organization and what they're doing.
Yeah, I think there's complete buy-in, I think, throughout their roster. I mean, you've seen Harden be, you know, honestly more active defensively in the past few games than I think I've seen him really in a long, long time, perhaps in his Rockets career. Westbrook, of course, is dialed in, and P.J. Tucker is a real leader who will never back down. I think any kind of malaise that kind of hung over the franchise last year, or even earlier in the season, to be completely honest, is kind of withered, and this team realizes that, A, they're pretty darn talented, B, they now have a system in place in which they can win. I don't think effort or buy-in will be a question. I just think, again, it's a matter of can their personnel, specifically defensively, hold up in a playoff series? I think that's matchup-dependent. I think that's still something that we need to see happen before I believe it.
I'm with you. I think there's a chance. I think I'm not gonna write them off because they have James Harden, and any team with James Harden is just, to me, like, you can't write them off. You can't. He's just too good. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, they have to figure out if they can continue to force these turnovers every night, and if they can keep the rebounding battle equal. Like, they're not gonna win the rebounding battle. They forfeited that. If they can keep it, like, within 3 or 4 rebounds. If they can only lose the rebounding battle by like 4 or 5 rebounds per game, that's fine. Like, as long as you're still winning that turnover battle night in, night out, as long as you're limiting second chance points, I think you can get there as a team defensively. Now, the question is, what is getting there for this team? I think, you know, the personnel on this team is pretty strong right now with Covington, Tucker, Eric Gordon, Rivers, like that, and you know they have some pretty decent defenders on the team, as far as the front court is concerned. Harden and Westbrook have to buy in. You mentioned that Harden has looked a lot better since they went to switching. Yeah, I agree with you, but he has to stay there. At the beginning of the season, he looked really rough defensively. There are still moments where he's just like. In particular, that fourth quarter in the Celtics game, like, and where he had 5 fouls, and obviously he wasn't trying to pick up a 6th foul. He was just letting guys drive by him, and those moments are the kind of moments you want to limit. Like, you want to make sure that's like, because your frontline defense is all you have. You don't have a backline defense anymore. So Harden has to be at least engaged defensively, and I realized that was a picky moment, and he only had 5 fouls, but he still has to limit those. He still has to move his feet, and that's the kind of stuff that he has to cut out of his game completely. He needs to make that like a 10% kind of play instead of a 40% kind of play.
Yeah, I agree with that. And frankly, as we said, he's an amazing post defender, obviously, but he honestly is a pretty poor perimeter one-on-one defender. A little slow on his feet, and he will reach and not really move it, as you said. I think that's something that teams are going to try to do in the postseason, and we kind of saw it last year. You know, he's such a dynamic scorer. If you try to exhaust him perhaps a little bit on the defensive end, teams are going to continuously try to attack him on switches over and over again, because frankly, in some of the Rockets' best lineup, he's the weak link defender, right? You know, if you have Westbrook, Covington, Tucker, and say House, like, Harden's clearly the worst defender, so teams are going to be trying to attack him in that space. He doesn't have to be an all-defense guy, obviously. He doesn't even have to be necessarily very good. But as you said, just passable defense, you know, honestly, on the perimeter, is something that will go a long, long way.
So let's end on this. At the trade deadline, they opened up 2 roster spots. And it seemed pretty clear that the top end of the buyout market would be intriguing. Like, Marvin Williams was a guy I thought would fit in seamlessly with the Rockets. But obviously, he went to the Bucks, and now the buyout market looks pretty barren. Like, I'm looking at it right now, and I can't really come up with names. Like, perhaps Courtney Lee is a guy for the Mavericks that, you know, he's kind of fell out of the rotation for the Mavs. But the Mavs are not a team traditionally that goes for buyouts. You know, they're really good. They're trying to make the playoffs. You don't make buyouts when you're a team like that. But, I mean, like, I can't find anybody else. Like, I really honestly cannot find someone, you know, a buyout candidate that comes to mind when you talk about filling out these last roster spots. Have you given that a little bit of thought over the past couple weeks?
I've given it a passing thought. Can I give you 2 uninspiring options at center? Kyle O'Quinn and Bismack Biyombo. Both of those guys, of course, don't move the needle. Don't make you a title contender or anything like that. I think Bismack, especially, I don't know if he'll get bought out. He's kind of a candidate, but he is, you know, a pretty athletic five, although he can't really do anything with the ball at all. O'Quinn is a little more nimble of a player. He's a little slower defensively. I don't think the Tristan Thompson thing's going to happen. I think the Knicks are going to keep Mo Harkless. Lee is a pretty good idea, I think. I think that's pretty smart. I don't think, like, Reggie Jackson is a guy who's going to come here. I don't think Evan Turner is going to get, like, bought out. It's a weak market. I think you're certainly right about that. What about Tyler Johnson? Does that interest you at all?
It interests me, I guess. And I guess if the Rockets are going to keep doubling down, but they're... Where is Tyler Johnson going to play in this rotation? There's like no minutes to be had in that back line. Like, you're pretty much only talking about a 6'7" or above player, and I'm looking at it and I just don't see it. Tristan Thompson, as you mentioned, would be an awesome option because he can switch everything defensively. He's someone I used to compare young Clint Capella to because of his ability to switch on perimeter players, but I mean, I don't think he wants a buyout, which is unfortunate because he's gonna get squeezed there behind Andre Drummond and Kevin Love. He's the third man out, and like he could help a really good team, and the Rockets could use his services even if they're going all in on small ball. Having Tristan Thompson waiting in the wings, if you want to go big, would be a nice option, especially since he fits in with your scheme.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's honestly one of the more underrated role men in the league as well. I know Houston's not playing much pick and roll anymore, but he's very efficient rolling to the rim. And you remember back in those final series in the playoff series with LeBron, sometimes they would just throw it in the vicinity of the rim and Thompson would go down and finish it. So he'd be a great option. Don't say the words Jeff Green to me. I'm not very interested. It's a rough group. I don't know if there's anyone that the Rockets are really going to that'll make an impact. I don't know if they'll add anyone at all. I mean, I guess you would have to assume that someone will be brought on, but I don't think it's anyone that will kind of swing their playoff hopes here. I know that's a bit of an uninteresting answer, but it's just kind of the truth. I don't see there any big additions on the horizon.
Yeah, when you said Bismack Biyombo, I cringed. Like, I was squealing in my seat. It just made me so uncomfortable when you said Bismack Biyombo. But, yeah, I'm with you. Like, there's really nobody on the buyout market right now that could really swing things for Houston. And, you know, unless a surprise shakes loose, I don't see anything shaking loose until, you know, late February. And, you know, players have to be waived by March to be playoff eligible.
Right.
And so I don't see a player right now getting waived. You know, you never know with these things, but it does look pretty barren. I think what the Rockets may do is use those two roster spots on some projects, which might be interesting. Like, you know, they're out of a bunch of young players, right? Like they used a lot of draft capital in that Westbrook trade, and they traded another first round pick here in this Covington trade. What they could do is use those two roster spots to, you know, take on some young players and, you know, perhaps use that as your filler first round pick for the year, right? Like, you go ahead and develop a young guy, perhaps in the G League you can find someone nice, or, you know, a guy at the end of a roster who's not getting playing time, bring him into your system, you know, kind of like what they did with Caboclo. You know, bring in somebody as a project, someone you know is not going to help you this year, but, you know, someone you can work on with the Vipers and, you know, at Summer League this year, like that kind of a player.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly no harm in it, and I don't assume that the Rockets will leave their spots empty. I mean, that would be kind of strange, but in terms of impact players or players who will even see playing time, there isn't really a guy who's popped up on my radar that I think will really, really fill the role. So, bad news for the Rockets, I guess, is that reinforcements are unlikely to come. Here's some good news for the Rockets. They face the number 24 schedule in terms of strength of schedule remaining. They're a break. They got a couple games with the Knicks. They got a couple Warriors games in there. You know, that's why I feel confident that Houston could, I think they will rise to 4. I think they could even rise to 3. 2 might be a stretch just based on Denver's success thus far, but I would be surprised if the Rockets aren't hosting a first-round series.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, the Rockets are really good. They don't actually need enforcements. You know, they have Eric Gordon coming back. That's interesting. They have Eric Gordon coming back after the All-Star break. Caboclo comes back after the All-Star break. I'm not sure if he'll really play, but backup center might be an intriguing option for him, actually. Like the Rockets have already told him, like, he's going to play center. Like, they already told him, like, yeah, you're not playing any position not named center for us this season, which would be really interesting. He's played a lot of, you know, big man minutes for Memphis, and he has some training in that arena. So it would be interesting to get a look at Caboclo. But yeah, you're right. Like, they're done. That as far as roster moves goes, like, they this is as complete of a roster as you're going to get going into the playoffs. And I think they'll climb up to four, and I think that's probably where they'll end up, like, finishing. And I don't suspect that anyone gets bought out, but it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it'll certainly be very fun, and I think that Bruno will get some playing time, and he seemed to be pretty comfortable with center. We talked to him, I'm trying to think, it wasn't before the Utah game, it was a couple of days before, and he said, you know, I've been watching centers for the last few months and seeing how they score and seeing how they defend, especially in smaller units. So he seems confident he can do it. I think that Mike will certainly give him a shot. I know Mike doesn't, you know, love playing the youngsters that much, but I would be pretty surprised if Bruno doesn't get at least some cursory minutes when he's able to be back on the floor.
Yeah, he's 2 weeks away from being 2 weeks away. So, Michael, where can we find all your work and follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at mshap2, and then you can find my work on si.com/NBA/Rockets.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Give us 5 stars on iTunes if you enjoy the show. And yeah, guys, good night.